blade of near blackness slices through her lust. I'm making her mad. Good on me. Perhaps if she's angry enough, she'll finally blurt out what she wants. Ah, there's anger now. And a bit of embarrassment. I know what we are now, she says in a shaking breath. The sound of her voice rakes against my cold heart. What we are. Is it truly possible she didn't know? Obviously she knew she was different, but could she have been ignorant about being the daughter of a demon? Possible, but not probable. It has to be a bloody lie. Congratulations! I consider kissing her just to see how she'll react, just to see how those pretty little lips feel. At that thought, I push away from the wall, berating myself, as I send my small dagger flying at the dartboard with a hard throw. Bullseye. I make it smoothly to the couch and turn, not wanting my back to her for too long. I sit and wait for her to explain why she's come, but she simply stands there at a loss. Heavy doubt clouds my mind. Did she come here to talk to me about what we are? If she didn't know before, how would she have found out? I want to ask, but if it's all a wicked hoax, I can't fall into her trap. Something inside me twinges. I hear something outside, but everyone should be gone by now. I push my hearing through the house and down our curved driveway. A smooth engine car. My father's velvety voice as he talks on his mobile, schmoozing someone, chuckling. Of all the bad fucking timing. I look at Anna, but she doesn't appear to be listening. Does she know he's coming? Is this a trap? I wait for a smug look to cross her face, for the act to drop, but she's the very same Anna, standing there in a cloud of hurt feelings. Sudden clarity smacks me, and I feel the strangest sense of protectiveness over my mysterious Nephilim girl. I know I've been contemplating whether or not she's working with Father and the other Dukes, but in that moment, my gut feeling overtakes me. I don't think she is. Deep down, I think she's legit. Call me a damned fool, but the idea of keeping this girl in the room with my father is like putting a speckled fawn in the path of a wolf. I have to hide her. Father is saying his goodbyes on the mobile now, and the driver is walking around to let him out. It's likely that Father has already heard us, but if he was on the phone, he mightn't have. If I attempt to take Anna out a back way, he will hear both of our footsteps and wonder why I'm avoiding him. I have about 1 minute to dupe him into thinking she's a hookup. I jump from the couch and lunge at Anna, grasping her shoulders hard and pressing my lips to her ear. I whisper, as softly as I can, "My father is here." She stiffens under my hand. Yes, she knows what we are. Therefore she knows Father is a demon. Be afraid, Anna. I pull her to the couch and fling her down. Thank God for female blouses with buttons. I rip it open, needing the scene to appear real. When she sucks in a shocked breath, I press a finger to her lips. Her aura is a swirl of grey tones, both fear and embarrassment. This is not the time for modesty. I can't have her appearing terrified if we're supposed to be going at it, so I toss a throw blanket at her and rip my own shirt over my head. I point to her shirt and she starts rolling her shoulders to get it off. God, she is sexy. Even in that innocent white satin bra. Let's just hope I haven't been a fool and she doesn't shove a dagger in my spine. I lower my body over hers and taste the skin at the base of her throat. I move upward to the curve of her neck and shoulder and let out a low moan. Our skin touches, and she moves underneath me in a sultry way, grasping the nearby pillows in her fists. I suddenly want all her clothes off. The sound of Father coming down the stairs erases that thought from my mind. He knows by now I'm with a girl, but he has no notion of privacy. When the door opens, Anna's body jumps under me and she lets out a squeak. I turn my head to the door where Father stands, smiling, inching farther to the side to get a better look at Anna. Damn, I can't hide her any further without being obvious. My apologies, son. I didn't realize you had company. He's still moving casually across the room, staring. Before I can say a word, the politeness slips from his features and his eyes flash red. I look down at Anna, who has foolishly allowed the blanket to fall enough to give Father a side view of her badge. I hold my breath. They definitely do not seem to know each other. I never imagined you'd care to entertain female Nephilim, he grits. Not good. Not fucking good. Neff can work together, but they are not to play together, especially in the one-on-one way. I don't normally. I stand and move away as if coming to my senses. She caught me while I was bored and alone after practice. His face sours as he scents the air. You will come up for tea. Both of you. He leaves and I ball my hands. Close my eyes. I want to punch something. Anna is my problem. My mystery. I don't want to share her with anyone, especially not the wolf upstairs. It's clear now they weren't working together. The blood has drained from Anna's face as she clutches the blanket to her chest. I simultaneously feel sorry for her and want to shout at her, she's a stupid, stupid girl for coming here. She reaches for her shirt and tries to put it on, but there are buttons missing from when I went all Incredible Hulk. I toss her my red t-shirt and she puts it on. No girl has ever worn my clothes before, and it's the embodiment of sexiness. I imagine her wearing it the morning after we've had an all-night shag fest. I shake my head. What the hell is wrong with me? Father is waiting. I lead her up the stairs to the sitting room, and I lean against the wall to watch, helplessly, as the wolf licks the fawn. She maintains her norm of complete innocence as Father questions her. I listen and learn all the things I was too afraid to ask, though I'm still unsure how she came by the information. She has no idea her demonic father's name is Belial or what he does. Belial most likely doesn't know she exists. She and I met coincidentally at a gig and she's just learning what she is. My head is spinning with thoughts when I hear Father say to Anna, "You reek of innocence." Yes, that's right. I can smell it. Your virginity. I nearly topple over in surprise, and Father laughs at the look of horror on Anna's face. There's no way she's pure. No way. Father smacks his knee in astonishment. A 16-year-old Neff virgin. How do you expect to be a bad influence on humans if you aren't behaving badly yourself? Anna says nothing, but her eyes dart around nervously. I'm still gaping in shock at the revelation. Father informs her she's the daughter of the Duke of Substance Abuse, and I'm so floored, so gobsmacked by her innocence, that blood rushes inside my ears and I can hardly concentrate. She was never out to kill me or test my loyalty. My God, she was truly drugged by that human boy, and probably was telling the truth about never having been kissed. How is this possible? It's just my luck that I'd stumble upon her. If I'd known, I could have urged her to move far away from Father and other dukes, but I was consumed by my own paranoid assumptions. I mean, really, what are the bloody chances? Oh, fantastic. Now Father is pulling out his bag of recreational drugs, and Anna is practically shivering and drooling as she looks at it all. I want to warn Father that Anna and drugs are not a pretty combination, but I clamp my mouth shut. I can't let myself feel bad for her. Father knows about her now, so she's no longer my problem. It's too late for should-haves. Anna will have to work now like the rest of us. It's her legacy to push drugs and alcohol. As a Neff, she has to be a bad girl by society's standards in every way, but still recognise when to be seemingly docile to stay out of trouble. Her ability to tempt others will be wrapped up in a blend of her sensuality, tolerance for substances, and a personality that makes her sin appear fun and harmless. Neff learned from an early age that sex, drugs and alcohol go hand in hand. It's what's expected by the Dukes, so Anna cannot remain a virgin. She'll learn and she'll be fine. She will grow to enjoy it. I will not feel bad. My head snaps up when I hear Father say my name. He's still talking to Anna. Kaiden will take good care of you. He'll have you working to the best of your abilities in no time at all. Don't take too long about it, though. Learn what you need to and get to work. He turns to me and I stand straighter. I'm expecting company this evening and you are to join us. Marissa is bringing one of her nieces. Acid rises in my throat. Yes, Father. Anna is staring at me with curiosity, and I have to look away. My mind is whirling when I return home from taking Anna to her apartment. So much has happened in the span of a few short hours. I can't believe she's lived with an adoptive mother all these years, a woman named Patty who loves her fiercely. Even I took to the woman straight away. And I can't believe what I've agreed to. I've gone completely mad, but the thrill of it is all-consuming. Her words tumble through my mind as I let myself in the front door of my house. What will happen if I don't, you know, do all the stuff your father told me to? Because I'm not going to. I want to wait until I'm married. My mother was an angel, a guardian angel. What does it mean to be Nephilim? The girl is half angel, half demon, an anomaly. I'd laughed and told her she's a walking contradiction, but truly, I'm mesmerized. I keep wondering what it must be like to be both. It's unheard of. And to be raised and nurtured by a human. Wow. And though it's all fascinating, her stubbornness against changing her ways cannot possibly last. Now that Father knows about her, she belongs to the Dukes, at least her body does. And they expect her to use her body for their purposes. Tomorrow morning I'll be up bright and early to begin teaching her the ways of the Neff. My thoughts are interrupted when I pass the sitting room. I stop dead in my tracks, shocked at myself for forgetting. Father is standing beside the leather sofa where Marissa sits with a small girl at her side. The girl I've been dreading. Fuck. No, no, no. I want to scream and rail. This cannot be happening. She is just as young as the pictures. Come in, Kaiden, Father says. I do as he says, and I see Marissa put a hand on the girl's leg when she whimpers. I can't bring myself to look the child in the eyes. Kaiden, this is Marissa's newest niece, Victoria, and we were hoping you could help ease her into her new life. His words are so casual. I've heard them 1,000 times. Though I've never liked this aspect of my job, I've never been repulsed like this. I grab the back of my neck, trying to steady myself. She doesn't speak English, Marissa says, but some things are universal, yes? She and Father share a smile. She is to remain a virgin, of course. I allow my gaze to flicker to the girl whose eyes are red-rimmed. Her light hair is pulled into loose pigtails. Her feet dangle, not touching the floor, in worn Mary Jane-style shoes. I step back, causing Father's eyes to glow like a stoplight. Marissa and the girl do not have the ability to see his eyes redden, and I wish I didn't either. Is there a problem? He asks through clenched teeth. The answer should be no, sir. I could try to force myself, I could try to think of someone else. Anna's face flashes through my mind's eye. She would cry if she saw this. I look at the little girl's feet again and I can't. I just bloody can't. Kaiden, Father whispers, and that one word is laden with warning. I dare to lift my eyes to his and open my mouth to speak the words. I'll do anything you ask of me that's in my physical power, Father. You know that. But I cannot force my body to react to a child. It's just not my thing. I grab the back of my neck again as he stares at me. I've never defied him. Shall I get you a Viagra? He asks. I nearly scoff. Oh yes, that's just what I need. Artificial lust. Marissa cackles in mirth at his cruel teasing. Anything but this, I whisper. Are you morally against it? He edges toward me, fire in his eyes. Do you think the services Marissa is providing to hard-working clients are beneath you? Of course not, I lie. Are you like the other prudes in society who think their brand of lust is the only acceptable one? He's right in my face now and my heart is racing. No, sir, lust is lust. Then what is the problem? He shouts, and spittle forms at the edges of his mouth. Marissa is grinning, and the girl Victoria begins to cry. Marissa pulls a fucking sweet from her purse and gives it to the child, crooning, "There, there." Father continues his tirade. Did you not tell me you can feel lust for anyone? Shite, I should never have told him that. Not anyone, sir. Only those who lust for me first. Yeah, nasty little fact about me. Anyone, and I mean anyone, who blazes a red aura for me, I will find something to fancy about them as well. Sexy ankles, full lips, shiny hair, you name it. It's as if my body is hardwired to do my job with no excuses. But this child has a few years before she'll know what lust is. Father huffs through his nose, nostrils flaring. This is it. This is where he'll give me an ultimatum. Take the girl to my room this instant, or dig myself a nice burial hole somewhere out in the woods. I can't believe it's come to this. Marissa stands and saunters over, placing a hand on Father's shoulder.
Darling, let him be.
She pushes herself in so she's sandwiched between us, her arse against Father and her heavy chest against mine. Father growls and takes her hips as she runs her hands over my shoulders and down my arms. Her aura goes red as she stares up at me, with blood-red lips and black-lined eyes. My stupid body reacts. Marissa laughs and rubs against me.
He can't help it if he prefers grown women.
I hate her. I will train the girl myself, love, Father says against her ear. I hate him as well. Father snaps his fingers twice in the air and shouts,
Raoul!
In a moment, the driver stands in the doorway.
Ready the car for Marissa.
Yes, sir.
The driver bows his head and hurries off. Father glares at me and then flicks his hand to tell me to get out of his sight. As I turn to go, I glimpse the girl with the sweet in her cheek and the sad eyes. I hate my life. Chapter 5. Road Trip with a Nun. Come and take a walk on the wild side, 'cause you and I, we were born to die. Born to Die by Lana Del Rey. After the events of last night, I need to focus on protecting myself and staying alive. Nevertheless, here I am, humouring this girl who refuses to do what's best for her, driving her across the country to meet her demon father for the first time. Yeah, there's no part of this arrangement that's smart, is there? Patty, although she seems to loathe the idea of Anna meeting Belial, thinks he will somehow be able to help and protect Anna. When Patty adopted Anna, she was told by the orphanage to find Belial and return to speak with a nun named Sister Ruth when Anna got older. There's more to this story than I can guess, and I'm too damn curious to walk away now. Plus, I feel a foreign sense of obligation for her. I could have offered to fly us, I certainly have the funds, but a road trip will allow me more time to figure her out, alone. I turn up the stereo, but my thoughts are louder. It's like Anna's a stray I stumbled upon, and she'll be crushed by a damn car if I let her out of my sight. I've never met anyone so filled with bloody goodness. She practically glows. When I'm with her, I feel different, lighter or some shit. I glance over at this girl, this naive neff, void of ego, and I shake my head. We drive with the music blaring. I expected my playlist to be too hardcore for her, but she seems perfectly content, even humming along with some of the songs. When Sex and Candy by Marcy Playground comes on, I see her listening intently. She meets my eye at the chorus, a splotchy blush running up her neck, before she quickly turns to stare out her window. I look forward again and grin, keeping an eye on the skies for evil whispering spirits. Although the landscape is boring, she stares out the windows like she's never seen anything so beautiful, as if she's on some incredible adventure with me. She's clueless about the dangers, even after I've told her straight up that she can't fuck about with the Dukes. They are ruthless, evil bastards, and they will kill her. She acts as if she's safe with me, as if I can protect her from them. That causes some idiotic thing inside my chest to swell and strengthen. I think Anna Witt is bad for my health. The thing is, as adorable as her innocence might be on the surface, it would be foolish of me to allow her to stay that way. She's not open to being trained, other than a mention of wanting to learn how to hide her colours. She refuses to see the necessity of losing her virginity, or at least pretending not to be so good. It's only a matter of time before the Duke starts sniffing around, but she just doesn't get it. She has no self-preservation instinct. I have to help her out. But I have to be smooth about it. I have to win her over. For both our sakes, I need to shag her like mad by the end of this road trip. Anna will be my toughest conquest yet. From what I've seen so far, she's the queen of self-control. A nun in training or some shite.
There's only one way to get a girl like Anna into bed before marriage, and I'm not looking forward to the amount of work it will require. She's not the kind of girl who goes for the bad boy, so I must be on my best behaviour. But in order for her to appreciate my best behaviour, she needs to think she's causing some positive change in me. I'll need to make her think I'm letting her into the deep, dark places of myself. Essentially, I have to make Anna fall in love with me and believe I'm in love with her as well. A twinge of guilt fills my bowels, but it's fleeting, gone before my next breath. It must be done. Eventually, she'll thank me. Day one goes well, I think, and I manage to get her to agree on a single room at the motel instead of separate ones. She's into me, drawn against her will, and I gladly take advantage of it. I get comfortable on my bed, enjoying the way she stares at me when she doesn't think I'm paying attention, and how easy it is to make her nervous when I play with my blade. After some uncomfortable chit-chat in which I talk about my childhood and father's horrible parenting, all true, I proceed to make her jealous with the texts I'm receiving from other girls, which is adorable. So far, she's playing directly into my hand, but her questions and need for knowledge eventually sidetrack my efforts. She seems fascinated that I'm always using my supernatural abilities. Her hatred of her neph senses is baffling. She needs to be proud of her heritage to understand the benefit of her extended senses. I go over and sit next to where she's lying on her bed, and she gets skittish, trying to scoot away. "No, stay lying down," I say, touching her arm. "I want to show you something." I want to show her a lot of things, and I dare say she knows this by now. She narrows those little brown eyes at me, and I have to laugh. "Calm down, love." I find that I say love a lot more since I moved to the States. American girls go crazy for it. Not sure it's working on Anna yet, but it's worth a try. "What are you going to do?" Her sweet voice and light southern accent go straight to my crotch, and I'm glad she's at an angle where she can't see. "Nothing that will compromise your virtue and have Patty hunting me down. Now close your eyes." I promised Patty I'd bring Anna home safely with her virtue intact. I plan to keep only the first part of that promise, even though I quite like Patty. What neither of them realise is that Anna's virtue is the very thing that will put her in danger. What I'm planning is a simple exercise to build her trust, to show her I'm more than a sex fiend. I want her to see that her senses can be pleasant. And maybe I want to touch her just a small bit. At first, I don't think she's going to play along. Then she lets out a huff and lies back. Good girl. But God, she's stiff as a board. "Now, I want you to relax and concentrate on your sense of touch. I'll be a good boy, I promise." I am planning to be good. I watch as she exhales and relaxes. I can imagine the tingling she feels as she opens her nerve endings to full exposure. And I remember something cool that my neph friend Marna once showed me when we were younger. Without touching any other part of her, I press my fingertip into the palm of her nearest hand. I smile when she gasps. "I can sense your fingerprint." Wicked. Wait until she feels what's next. I scoot down and take her foot into my hand. I watch Anna's face soften with bliss as I knead and press my fingers against her soul. Then I move up to her ankle, and suddenly her eyes pop open as she wrenches her knees to her chest. What did I do? "Wait," she says. "Not my legs, they're..." What is she going on about? "They're lovely. In fact, they're killer." "No, please. I didn't have time to shave this morning." I throw my head back and laugh. Call me sick and twisted, but it takes a hell of a lot more than a little hair to bother me. Her paranoia is adorable, though. "All right, fine, no legs, but you're missing out. I'm not through with you. Roll onto your stomach and relax again." She obeys immediately, and I'm so relaxed I forget to mentally prepare myself for the sight of... I don't mean to moan, it just sort of slips out, but her arse? Blimey, it's fucking perfect. I bite down hard on my knuckle. "What?" she mutters into the pillow. "Oh, nothing. Except I can't think straight. It's just that you've got quite a nice little
Damn, she moves quick. She's glaring sharply and I hold up my hands. Little Anne can be feisty when she wants.
Sorry! A guy can't help but notice. Truly, best behaviour, starting now.
I want her to hurry and lie back down so I can stare at that arse again. This is far too fun. She rolls back over, slowly and wearily, and then, hello, perfect bum. Would it be okay if I touch it? Just once? No, this is Anna Witt. It would decidedly not be okay to touch the bum. I recognise that my self-control is unwinding bit by bit. I'm unaccustomed to looking and not touching, sampling and not devouring. This moment is pushing my limits. I must stay calm, moving us to the next level. My voice comes out low and husky when I talk. I need you to trust me and stay relaxed. I'm just going to raise your shirt a bit so I can get to your back. Is she buying this? She doesn't move, so I take that as permission to gently pull her shirt upward and expose her soft, creamy back. My breathing goes a bit wonky. Angel Girl is letting me see her skin. She's going to let me touch her. She's trusting me. My fingers sink into the soft skin and muscle on her lower back, working slow circles. Holy Mary, I'm all but panting. Get it together, Ro. This is the least sexual thing I've done in ages, and it's turning me on more than the bloody van full of naked girls. I run my fingers across her back until she's covered in goose flesh. She is reacting to me, and I need to touch her with more than just my fingers. My hands press down, massaging harder, gripping her waist in my hands. I need more. I try to shake the rising fog from my head, but it's no use. My own sense of touch begins to open itself, my skin buzzing with neediness. She feels like silk. I need more. My hands go farther, past her satin bra, up to her shoulders. I might rip her shirt, and I don't bloody care. I'm nearly beyond thinking. Her pheromones and red aura encircle me, grip me. I am need. I am greed. And I take what I want. Her skin calls to me, and I'm above her, moving her hair aside and breathing in the warmth of her neck. I have to taste her, or I think I will die, implode, explode, something terrible will happen. I home in on the spot under her ear, and my desperate lips finally touch her. This is my heaven. Her neck is heated and she lifts her chin, allowing me to kiss further. Her body slightly twists, angling toward me. I open my mouth, dragging my tongue along the silk and salt and sweetness of her, up to her jaw. And then she's turning, her hands are in my hair and she's leading my mouth to hers. I'm overwhelmed by this kiss. She must be using angel voodoo on me because I can't think. I can't. I'm trying, but all I can feel is her lips. I'm more lost to the world than I've ever been. I want to let go and never come back, lose myself in her for eternity. I need more. I need all of her. Her stomach is so smooth. The satin of her bra is filled with a mouthful of flesh that's sure to be the most succulent. Abruptly, Anna shoves me away, and I feel as if I've been doused by fire. What the fuck was that? Bloody hell, my heart is pounding like an amateur's. I cannot let her know how freaked out I am. She's panting. You promised to be on your best behaviour. Her aura is a mix of greys and red. I'm suddenly furious we're still not kissing. Why would anyone put a halt to such epicness?
You kissed me, Anna, I remind her. Well, you started it by kissing my neck.
Her neck. It had been so warm and inviting. True, I hadn't planned that. She paces the room, attempting to fix her hair, but she's too angry and lustful. She's shaking.
Why did you stop?
I ask.
Because you were moving on to other things.
What other things? Oh, I suppose my hand did wander a bit, didn't it?
Moved too quickly. Rookie mistake.
Judging by the way she crosses her arms, it probably would have been best to keep that thought inside my head. I'm still not quite thinking straight. Why is she having this effect on me? And for the love of all things holy, why aren't we still snogging?
It was slightly amusing at first when she stopped us, but now that I know she's serious, I'm starting to feel a rise of panic. My body has not and will not shut off or calm down. This could get ugly. I can see you still want me, I say. It's true, she's only being stubborn. Is this some kind of cruel angel punishment? Now she wants to be pissed off instead of lustful. Oh, there he goes, mad instead. Well, sort of. You can't seem to muster a really good anger. Stop it! Sorry, was I saying that out loud? She really hates when I read her colours, so I do it as often as possible. And right now, it's better to be cheeky than to let her know I'm frantic on the inside. My demand for relief is growing. I can read people too, you know. Here she goes again with the feistiness. Well, not you, but at least I have the decency not to notice, to give them some sort of emotional privacy. No doubt, because she's a bloody nun. How very decent of you. She grunts with frustration and throws a pillow at me. It's probably the angriest she's ever been in her life. I raise an eyebrow to see how much madder I can make her. Pillow fight? She wants to scream. I can see it in her rigid, huffing demeanour, but she takes a cleansing breath and deflates a notch. Nice trick. If only I could do that. I've got some parts that could use deflating. Get off my bed, she orders. Please, I'm ready to go to sleep. That's a load of bollocks. She's not tired. She's as filled with passion as I am. But she's too bloody good to embrace it. Her self-control burns me up. I want her to throw a wobbly and break things, then pounce on me. But seriously, we should be naked. I get off the bed and wave an arm toward it. She climbs deep into the covers and puts her back to me. I try to bring her back to life by reminding her that I saved her from the plonker who drugged her at the party and almost stole her first kiss. But she doesn't take the bait, doesn't leap from the bed and jump my bones, doesn't even turn to face me. Then I remember. I had her first kiss. That's right, me. And I want to beat my chest like an ape. So that's it then, I say. My lust is still working at full throttle rocket mode, but there will be no countdown to launch. I'm torn between disbelief and a rising ache deep in my abdomen. It hurts like hell. It takes everything in my power not to be the caveman my father wants me to be and ravage this girl senseless. I always wondered what it would feel like. What would feel like? She finally looks at me. Rejection. It would be humorous if it weren't for the pain element. I've never felt this before. What are you saying? That no girl has ever told you no? She needn't sound so shocked. Not one, I say. I won't tell her I seek out those who show interest to begin with. And what about you? Haven't you ever stopped or said no to a girl? Pfft, why would I do that? Lots of reasons, she mumbles. Never mind, just go to sleep. We have a long day tomorrow. She rolls back over, making all sorts of ruckus as she settles. I've never had much cause to hate my lustful heritage. I've always been able to sate the beast, but at this moment, all I want is this mad need for her body to disappear. It's more than just pain now. It feels as if a black cloud is consuming me, fogging my mind and vision. I attempt to blink it away. I think about Anna's last question, and suddenly my childhood mate Ginger's face fills my mind. That awkward, terrible night when she hit on me in front of Blake comes rushing back. I suppose I did refuse one, but she doesn't count. I'm babbling now, but talking seems to help. Will this feeling pass? Why not? She asks. Because she was Neff. My stomach tightens when I think of Ginger. She was my friend once. My closest friend. Anna says nothing, and I'm left standing there with a rather large problem. The feeling is not passing. I desperately need to have sex, or I may have to curl into the fetal position and howl. I adjust myself while she's not looking. How do regular blokes deal with this torture when they're turned down all the time? This must be the part where I take a cold shower. Can't she sense my need? Doesn't she care at all that it feels as if I've been racked by a giant? Apparently not. Good idea, is all she says. Cold-hearted. I trudge stiffly to the bathroom and climb into the shower, but it does nothing for me. I cannot believe this is happening. I shouldn't have lost control while we kissed. I should have taken my bloody time and gotten her so hot she was begging for more. How the hell did the little nun get the upper hand over me? I am reduced to showering with myself, which is an inadequate substitute for what I need. But then I remember the girl at the hotel desk who checked me in, mid-twenties, bored out of a gourd, completely hot for me. Brilliant. I dry myself and walk into our room stark naked, but she doesn't even peek. The girl is infuriating. I quickly dress, find a room key and open the door. Anna perks up from her bed. Where are you going? Look who suddenly cares. I frown at her, hoping she feels a bit of the pain and frustration I'm experiencing. I have to work, I say. Have to or want to? Anger and indignation rip through me. This girl has no clue, and she has the nerve to try to make me feel bad. She's never feared for her life. She's never given in to her dark side and then experienced the physical impossibility of ignoring it ever again. I cannot stand here and listen to her. Why should that matter, Anna? I'm going now. Where will you go? She all but shouts. She sounds a bit desperate, which gives me some amount of satisfaction. I'm glad to tell her, and I hope it makes her share a bit of my agony. I'll go visit the girl at the front desk, just as she suggested. So unless you change your mind... I give her one last chance, and I watch as envy and sadness fight for space in her aura. But she only shakes her head. Didn't think so, I mutter. Then I flick off the light and shut the door, checking to be sure it locks behind me. Her words ring in my ears, but I shake my head to rid myself of them. I enjoy my work most of the time, and tonight I definitely will. I walk with purpose down the pavement to the front office where I can see the girl through the glass window. She's on her mobile. When she catches sight of me, her eyes go wide and she quickly hangs up, smoothing her curls down. She greets me with a big smile and a heavy southern accent. Hi there, Mr. Rowe, right? Everything okay? Yes, just Kaiden, please. I swish damp hair from my eyes. I'm not really in the mood for a detailed seduction. I prefer to make this quick, so I delve into my bag of douchery. I'm trying to give my sister some time to herself in the room. Our grandmother just passed and she's taking it hard. The girl puts a hand against her chest and her aura fills with sadness. Oh, bless her heart and yours. I'm sorry about your grandma. I nod, looking sad, which isn't hard since I'm feeling rather strange in general. I lean against the counter and wonder if Anna's okay in the room. I do a quick auditory scan, but it's quiet in there. I don't see any demon whisperers about doing their rounds for the Dukes. Hope I'm not bothering you. I look at her name tag, Vanessa.
Not at all, she says brightly. You can call me Nessa. It gets boring here, so I'm glad to have company.
I work for my uncle. This place is kind of... She sticks out her tongue and makes a face. Job is a job, right? I lean against the counter, crossing my arms. I cringe against a bout of needling pain. I'm glad to have some company right now, too. It's been a rough week. We lock eyes, and I hold her stare until her aura lights up bright red. Then I brazenly let my eyes drop to her lips, down to her chest, back up to her eyes. She is besotted, holding her breath, lust thumping through her. I let out a dry chuckle and run a hand through my hair. What's the most fun you've ever had here at work, Nessa?
She laughs nervously. I don't know.
Because I could really use some fun right now if you're up for it. More nervous laughing.
I mean, what kind of...
I've taken a huge gamble that I might overwhelm or frighten her, but so far she hasn't run screaming. She's nervous and excited, probably wondering if I mean what she thinks I mean. She licks her dry lips and glances over her shoulder at the small office with the door ajar.
At your uncle's office? I ask.
Yeah,
she grins. I slowly walk around the front desk, our eyes locked, and her aura jumps with orange and red when I reach her. She licks her lips again.
Just so we're on the same page, Kaiden, what kind of fun are we,
I step closer as she babbles.
Talking about?
The kind that will take my mind off everything and make you very happy, I say in a low voice. I hold back the beast with all my energy and wait for her to give me the go.
Oh, she breathes.
She tentatively touches my forearm and lets her fingers travel down to my hand where we join fingers. My relief is palpable.
Thank you,
I whisper. I bring my mouth down to hers, this lovely girl whose face I won't remember after a week's time. I'm hoping for that epic passion to hit me like it did in the hotel room, but it doesn't. We're moving toward the office door, groping and snogging as we go. I kick the door closed behind us with my foot. She moans as I lift her onto the desk.
I can't believe this is happening.
I silence her with my mouth and focus. Though her hair is curly, not straight, and she doesn't smell of pears, I let my need take over, and I give her the best night of work she's ever had. An awful thought occurs as I walk back to the room. Had Anna listened to my office romp? Wait a bloody minute, who cares if she did? Perhaps it would do her some good, stubborn girl. But still, I feel oddly off. I can't put my finger on it, but the sex with Nessa didn't offer me the satisfaction it should have. In fact, it left me feeling empty, like a husk, needing something more. What I need now is a good night of sleep to shake off the rejection from Anna. She's got my brain muddled, is all. I knew she'd be a hard sell, but this is worse than I'd imagined. I hadn't expected to sleep with her the first night, but I definitely hadn't anticipated a firm stop sign when I barely reached second base. I'm accustomed to getting what I want. I shake my head as I let myself in the room. Anna is quiet and still, but her breathing is too shallow. She's still awake. I go to the bathroom to wash up and brush my teeth. Then I strip naked and climb into bed. I prop a hand behind my head and wonder what the little nun is thinking about. I should go to sleep, but I can't help but get under her skin one last time, the way she's gotten under mine with her angel voodoo.
Anna?
I'm not surprised when she doesn't answer. Did you at least enjoy your first kiss? She's quiet a second more.
Just go to sleep, Carden.
It's not a no, which makes me smile in the dark. I learned a valuable lesson tonight about how to win over Anna. Tomorrow, I'll be on my A game. I let out a deep breath and fall straight to sleep, semi-satisfied. Chapter 6. Pears and Oranges. I keep a sinister smile and a hold of my heart. You want to get inside, then you can get in line, but not this time. Hero Heroine by Boys Like Girls. Winning over Anna means walking a fine line. In many ways, she's like other girls. She giggles and blushes and is flattered when I flirt, but only to a certain extent. Unlike most other girls I've met, Anna is an old soul. She's like a proper old woman in a hot young body. She can be a downright prude biddy, saying things like, "Do you think you could try to be a gentleman and maybe wear shorts to bed?" And, "This is going to be a long trip if you give girls the bedroom eyes every time we stop." I'll admit, I love to shock her. I stood there nude this morning, wanting her to see exactly what was available for the taking. But cripes, I hadn't expected her to scream like a banshee. And that's the problem. I'm not the only one doing the shocking here. She continues to render me speechless with nonchalant admissions like, "I can sense pregnancies," and "I can feel other people's suffering." Exactly how powerful is this girl? She can bloody well do angel things, and her angel voodoo has other power as well, such as the power to make me open my mouth and say entirely too damn much. She's just so selfless, so genuinely interested. There are brief moments when I feel, I don't bloody know how to explain it, but I don't feel myself. I'm supposed to be making her fall for me. I'm supposed to be reminding her that I'm badass and then crafting moments of comfort and openness. Well, that's exactly what's happening, but I'm not crafting shite. Instead, I'm feeling it. She's using her skills on me. This girl is dangerous. She's got the talents of a cookie-making nana, a world-renowned psychologist, and a seductive succubus all in one. And the most mind-bending part is that she has no clue about her effect on me. It's only been 2 days, and I'm torn between wanting to throw her to the wolves before she infects my mind any further, or hide her and keep her all for myself. And now she's asking me about other girls, about my motives when I work.
She is digging too deep and assuming I'm some sad chump who feels bad for what I do. But I don't. Yet it's not to my benefit to announce what a heartless bastard I am. It is good she's talking non-stop, though. In our quiet moments, all I can think about is having sex with her, pulling over behind an oversized road sign or lifting her onto my lap as I drive. And then as I drive, she says something that throws a spanner in the works. I care about you. Her words reverberate through me and fill me with a sense of terror. Don't say that, I snap. I'm shaking on the inside. This is what I wanted, right? For her feelings to grow. But it's not how I thought it would be. It's far more complicated because now I'm feeling things I didn't anticipate, like guilt, and I can't understand why. You shouldn't say that about caring. You hardly know me. She's too foolish, too open and trusting, watching me with those fawn eyes. Damn it, she needs to know the constant danger she will be in for the rest of her life. She needs to understand how I live and breathe that danger every day. She needs to lose her virginity to convince the Dukes she's one of us. If she doesn't embrace her life as a Neff, the Dukes will end it for her. And you hardly know me, but here we are, she says. You offered to take me on this trip, you've answered my gazillion questions, you haven't forced me to do anything, and you haven't exposed me to your father. I'm glad to be here with you. No, stupid feelings. I will not let those warm chocolate chip cookie words soften me. I hold the wheel tightly and stare at her. God, she's pushy, question after question, not satisfied with half answers, searching for what she wants to hear, that I'm a good guy underneath. Why are you trying so hard to make me think you're a bad person? She asks. Just like the human woman Patty, Anna won't be satisfied with anything but the truth. So I'll give it to her. Because it would be best for you to have a healthy fear of me so you can't say you weren't warned. I'm not like the boys at your school. Think of the pull you feel toward drugs. That is how I feel about sex. Her face slackens with understanding. That's right. We both live with an insatiable beast inside. Starting to get it now. Let me be even clearer. I can feel someone out within 5 minutes of conversation to know what I would have to say and do to lure her into bed. That includes you, though I admit I was off my game last night. With some people, it's a matter of simple flattery and attention. With others, it takes more time and energy. I do whatever it takes to get their clothes off, and then I attempt to make it so they'll never be with another person and not think of me. I know secrets of the human body most people don't even know about themselves. And when I leave, I know they're ruined when they're begging me to stay. It's my legacy. I have no regrets. As Anna watches me with wide eyes, grey zaps of fear burst inside her aura. She understands. It's about time, I say. New Mexico brings more awe-filled staring out the windows at the passing scenery and more questions about the hierarchy of demons and Neff. It's insane how much she doesn't know. She wants to learn, even though the details sadden her to tears. Hopefully this knowledge will allow her to begin seeing the dark, whispering spirits, which she should have been able to see for years now. It has to be her innocence that keeps her from seeing them. She needs to know what they're up to so she can stay safe when I'm no longer around. When we stop for night two, I'm surprised that Anna allows us to share a room again. Naughty possibilities immediately fill my mind and I have to tamp them down. I will not lose my head again. I stand on the second story balcony with my arms crossed while Anna talks to her mum on the phone. And yes, I use my powers to listen through the glass. I listen to all their conversations in Georgia as well, and they knew it. Sue me. Just be careful not to let your guard down, Patty says. Good advice. Only Anna doesn't have a guard. She is an unshielded open book. Okay. Love you, Anna says in that sweet voice of hers. I love you too. Anna makes a kiss sound and Patty does it back and they both laugh. Their relationship fascinates me. They say those three words every single time. And I get a fucking shiver down my spine every time I hear it. What is that like? To know someone feels that way for you no matter what and would do anything for you. Everything I've seen about love is fickle. People don't work for it. They take it for granted. They abuse it. But these two, they embrace it. I listen as Anna lets herself out of the room with a soft click. Her footsteps down the carpeted hall, the whir of a vending machine dispensing. Minutes later, she's opening the sliding door and standing behind me. I wonder if she'll touch me. I wait for it, wanting it. But instead she steps to my side and presses cold water against my arm. She got one for me, of course, always thoughtful. Thanks. Our arms touch, sending a rush of heat through me. I think about kissing her again, right out here in the fading dusk of light, but I know it's not time. Her aura is unsure. She's both happy and nervous, but not lustful, as we lean against the railing together. She looks sweet in a ponytail that began high this morning, but now droops loosely as if it's had enough of this travelling business. I want to run my fingers through it, let it slide heavily over my hands, maybe give it a tug to make her gasp. Cripe, bad Kai. Anna flinches a little and sniffs, and for a moment I wonder if she can bloody well read thoughts, because she leaves me to go back in the hotel room. I listen as she walks into the bathroom, and it sounds as if she's touching my toiletry bag. Perhaps she needs to borrow a razor for her legs. Ha! I smile and go inside. What I see in the bathroom makes me accidentally chuckle. Anna Witt is sniffing my deodorant. When she hears me, she startles, dropping the deodorant into the sink with a clatter and a scream. Everything about this amuses me and turns me on. Because, yeah, she's touching and smelling my stuff. I can't help but laugh. Okay, that must have looked really bad, she says as she fumbles to put my things away. I was just trying to figure out what cologne you wear. Ah, I see. This is an interesting turn of events. She's caught my scent. I cross my arms and move into the room, trying not to show how much I'm enjoying this. I haven't been wearing any cologne. Oh, she clears her throat. Let's just forget about it. Not a chance. What is it you smell exactly? Ginger told me what my pheromones smelled like when we were younger, and if that's what Anna is detecting, that means she's been opening her senses unknowingly. I move forward, wanting her to look at me, but she won't. That's okay. Judging by her mix of anxiety, excitement, confusion, and lust, I'm affecting her just fine. I don't know, she says. It's like citrus in the forest or something. Leaves and tree sap. I can't explain it. Ginger said I smelled like sour kumquats and dirt, the cow. I think she just enjoyed saying kumquat. Citrus? Like lemons? Oranges mostly, and a little lime too. I like her description a lot more than gin's. I flick the hair from my eyes. Things are about to get serious. What you smell are my pheromones, Anna. Her laugh is a shrill, nervous burst as if she doesn't believe me. Oh, okay then, well. Anna tries to leave the bathroom, but I shift to block her. We are not finished yet. People can't usually smell pheromones. You must be using your extra senses without realizing it. I've heard of Neff losing control of their senses with certain emotions. Fear. Surprise. Wait for it. Lust. Embarrassment rises up, but there is still a hint of red lining the bottom of her aura as she babbles a lame excuse about her senses. She's far too adorable to be trapped in a bathroom with the likes of me. Would you like to know your own scent? I ask. Her eyes widen as they dart around the bathroom. Not really. I think I should probably go. I think not. You smell like pears with freesia undertones. Wow, okay. She clears her throat and her aura pops with lust. I think I'll just... She presses herself against the sink to inch past me, as if touching me will set off a bomb. I hold up my hands, far too amused. She rushes about the room, stuffing her feet into sneakers. If she thinks to escape me, she'd better think again. I'm not letting her out of this hotel without me. And she can be in denial all she wants, but there will be more snogging tonight. Going somewhere? I ask. Yeah, I'm going for a run. Not alone, you're not. Mind if I join you? Only if you'll do something for me. My eyebrows go up. Teach me to hide my colours, she says. Not exactly what I had in mind. Very well then. Skills now, snogging later. I watch her ass as she climbs the rocks ahead of me, and I'm glad I'm wearing loose shorts. I need to calm down before we get up there. It's a bit easier when she reaches the top and sits, successfully obstructing any view of her backside. I give myself a moment, then pull up next to her and lie down. I stretch out on the warm, lumpy rock surface, staring up at the sky, trying not to think about sex. Last night's escapade was not enough. Even with all I divulged to Anna today, I dare say she's not ready to sleep with me yet. Perhaps I'm going about this all wrong. Perhaps I should pretend to be smitten. Is that what she'd prefer? Maybe if... What is she doing? I go completely still as her hand tentatively touches my knuckles, and her fingers slide between mine, soft and warm and small. She's holding my hand. Why is my heart beating so fast? And why does it feel like we're going entirely too fast and too slow all at once? I search the skies for dark whisperers, stretching my senses in a wide arc, but there's no sign of spirits. I let myself feel her hand in mine, even though Kaiden Row does not hold hands. The gesture is so simple, so lovely that it rocks something deep inside me. I contemplate pulling away but decide to let it continue, telling myself it's all an act and that two hands touching is not a monumental event. We lie there a bit longer, holding hands and chatting. She pays close attention as I explain how I visualize the hiding of my aura, and her eagerness draws me in. I find myself wanting her to learn, wanting to assist her. An hour flies by. I'm shocked and relieved by how quickly she catches on. Think of all the other things I can teach her. That thought sends a shot of lust straight to my groin, and I shift. Damn it, focus. We're not finished working on her aura. Hiding emotions is much more difficult in real terms. I need to see how she handles disguising her feelings under duress. I need to rattle her. Naturally, lust is the first thing that comes to mind, so I let my instincts take over. You know, for the record, Anna, I won't think any less of you if you change your mind about doing the things my father expects. Please change your mind, I silently beg. Let me train you and have your body just once. Then maybe this ridiculous craving for her will go away. I touch her ankle and let my fingers and palms slide up the back of her smooth calf. She's frozen under my touch, trying not to let it affect her. I can see the concentration on her face when her small throat flexes with a swallow. I watch her chest heave in shallow gasps as my fingers meet the bend at the back of her knee, running across the soft crevice. Words pour out of me, an insatiable need growing like a live thing inside me. It's just you and me right now, Anna. I felt you come alive when we kissed, and I know you're afraid of that, afraid to unleash that other side of yourself. I don't realize how true the words are until they're out of me. Her eyes are wide. But you needn't worry. I can handle her. I can, and I want to. I'm not interested in taming her. Together, we could be a wild fire, out of control, feeding off each other's breaths, wanting, needing, taking, consuming. God, it could be so good. My hand moves farther up, cupping the muscle of her thigh. I want to keep going, but her hand firmly locks around my wrist to stop me. I search the aura around her, desperate to see a shock of red. I lean in, ready to devour her mouth the moment her lust shows, but it never does. And the disappointment I feel is palpable. It's a kick to the sack, physically, but mentally I'm torn between being proud of her acquired skills and yet dying to see her colours again. I need to know what she's feeling. No, she says. I marvel at how her voice can be soft and firm at the same time. Our eyes lock, and there's so much stirring in her depths. Her long blonde ponytail hangs lazily over one shoulder, untamed wisps of hair escaping. That hair, the way she always ties it back, is like a symbol of her wild beauty kept under wraps. I want to let it loose. I want Anna to come undone in my hands. It's only lust, I tell myself, but seducing Anna is proving to be a different sensation, something foreign and distinctly dangerous. It's because she's Neff, I reason. It's because she's your most difficult conquest yet. It's because her angel voodoo is fucking with your head. Yes, all of it.
I break away from her and bend a knee to block my body's reaction to the lust test. She watches my face closely, always searching. Sorry, I had to play dirty, I tell her, and she sort of nibbles her lip. Some people work better under pressure. Now, if you don't mind, I should probably walk it off. Yeah, I need to get away from her. I jump down from the rocks and pace, breathing in the night air. When my body is finally under control, I find Anna waiting patiently atop the rock. My stomach stirs with a strange feeling at the sight of her, and I want to stab myself for being so weak. I reach up to help her down, saying, "Come on." She takes my hand without hesitation, and we walk silently to the hotel. I'm relieved she's learned to hide her emotions. We're one step closer to having her trained. Now all I have to do is bang the innocence out of her, deliver her to her demon father, and find out what that nun lady wants with her. Then I can deliver her back to the world in good conscience, and never have to see her again. I'm halfway through my shower when it becomes glaringly obvious that I cannot go an entire day without being sated by another willing person. There is no way around it. I was careful tonight not to lose myself to the beast, but it's always there, under the surface, starving for another fix, no matter how well I tamp it down. I've always simply accepted it, and for the first time ever, I'm resenting this urge. What I really want to do is go into that room and claim my place directly between Anna's lovely legs. But I know she's not having any of it. Yet. And I don't have time for a long seduction. I cannot focus. The painful ache is returning to my abdomen, a dense tugging, and I need sex now. I come out of the restroom in cargo shorts, and Anna's eyes flicker over my bare chest. I look for her aura before remembering she can hide it now, but her eyes say enough. She likes what she sees. If only she'd act on it. I pull a shirt from my bag and finish dressing. It's time to go. I clear my throat, suddenly nervous, which is shite. I cannot possibly care what she thinks. I'm being an idiot. Right then, I say. I'll just, be out for a bit. Her entire being slumps with disappointment, and I feel as if she's kicked my chest. Don't go, she says. Another kick. Where is this coming from? This is who I am. And I refuse to let her make me feel guilty. Anger rises instead, and I grasp it, feeling more at home in its prickly embrace. Where I really want to be is here, tangled with her. But I know that's not going to happen, which pisses me off. I have to work, Anna, either out there or in here. Tell me to stay, little Anne. Crook your finger and beckon me over. It wouldn't kill you to take a night off, she says, jutting out her tiny chin. It's kick number three, and anger is giving over to a strong flood of fury. Is that so? I tell myself to relax, but her self-control and judgment and lack of understanding make me want to shake her. Words drip from my mouth like venom. Says the little doll who's never had to work a day in her life. She is not being what she's supposed to be. I am. She doesn't know that once you give in to the beast, there's no going back. You must feed it. But she keeps pushing me, keeps talking about shite she can't comprehend, keeps trying to make me feel bad for what I am. It's not like demons are monitoring your behavior, Anna says. She cannot see the demons, the whisperers. She doesn't know how they network, how quickly I can be spotted not working, how they'd rush to turn me in. She doesn't know what it means to live in fear of them showing up at any given minute, but I'm too enraged to communicate any of this. Don't push me, Anna, I warn, grasping for control. You don't know what you're talking about. Nobody has ever made me feel this way. I can see she's worked up too, her face pink and her eyes intense. I have to leave. As I turn to go, she shouts, "You can make it one night without sex." Rage blinds me like a white flash and my body reacts. Her next words are drowned out as a need to destroy something bears down on me, and I swing at the nearest lamp, sending it flying. It smashes against the wall with a satisfying crash, leaving my ears ringing. I point hard at Anna, who needs to get a bloody clue and stop pushing my buttons. You don't understand. I am panting with an overflow of emotion. She appears ashen, staring at me like I've kicked a kitten, and it's all too much. I drop my arm. I'm out of here. Don't wait up this time. I nearly steamroll an ancient couple when I burst into the hallway. I leave them tottering there as I take the stairs down to the first floor.
The hotel has a bar and it's hopping with a dance area. Oh, bloody hell, they're square dancing to country music. My eyes dart to a bored-looking woman at the end of the packed bar, nursing a margarita. Early 30s, grey business suit, black hair waving to her shoulders. No time to waste. I sidle up next to her, waiting to catch the bartender's attention. I feel the woman watching me, so I glance over. She quickly looks away, a fizz of orange excitement in her aura. My eyes drift to the cleft of cleavage exposed at the top of her blouse. I check out her ring finger, bare, possibly divorced. Her nails are manicured, and she takes good care of herself. I give a nonchalant nod. Hello. She smiles and confidently brushes her hair from her shoulder. London? I nod, sweep my eyes over her. She looks away again and her body language says she's not interested, but her aura says otherwise. I hope she'll not play hard to get. I'm Kaiden. Celeste, and I'm way too old for you, she says, as if that will put an end to my interest. I laugh at her openness and stick out my hand. She eyes it a moment before shaking it and turns her attention back to her drink. The bartender finally comes over. I hand him my fake ID and say, Jack on the rocks. I feel her perk next to me as she takes in the exchange. Hopefully she believes I'm 21 now. Celeste, mind if I sit? I motion to the stool next to her. Free country, do as you like. She absently stirs her margarita as I sit. Methinks Celeste is a tad jaded. But I can work with that. I can work with anything. Staying at the hotel? I ask. Real estate conference, you? I'm here for the night. Headed to LA. A blast of pain in my gut urges me on. Keep her talking. She takes a long drink. What's in LA? My band? I lie. Let me guess, she says sarcastically. Lead singer. I laugh and throw back half my drink, relishing the burn, before setting it down and looking at her again. Drums. A flash of red trots into her aura. She finishes off the margarita. I order her another. You didn't have to do that, she says. I know. She sips her margarita, licking a touch of salt from the rim. I watch her tongue, the beast growling inside me. How old are you? Kaiden. I'll never understand why women are so obsessed with age. I level her with my gaze, getting serious. Old enough to bring you more pleasure than you ever thought imaginable. Celeste's eyes widen a fraction, her aura blazing red before returning to a grey of distrust. Those are big words, she says. I chuckle. Good thing I can back them up. I throw back the rest of my drink and set the glass down hard. Look, you're wasting your time here. There's a girl over there with her eye on you, Celeste says, nodding across the dance floor. Maybe you should go talk to her. I don't even glance where she's pointing because I'm invested now. I love a challenge. Without looking at Celeste, I say, I prefer women to girls. Signaling to the bartender, he pours a new drink and slides it in front of me. The music gets louder and, if possible, twangier, making people cheer. I send my hearing up to our room and find only silence, then a rustle as Anna turns over in the bed. Her breathing is even, slow. Is she asleep already? She's not upset about my show of temper. Isn't she at all curious what I'm up to? Beside me, Celeste lets out a small laugh, shaking her head. Do you know how long it's been for me? The margaritas are catching up with her. No idea, but I'd be happy to remedy that for you. She shakes her head like I'm full of shite and asks, Why? Because you're sexy. She narrows her eyes. Like I said, you're wasting your time. I don't think I am, actually. We nurse our drinks in silence. After a few minutes of this, she sighs. You're not giving up, are you? No, Celeste, I'm not. I turn to her. She thrums the bar top, staring at her hand. I don't have condoms. My insides jump, but my face stays passive and confident. I do. Her face turns up to me and we stare. The beast claws at the ground in anticipation. Fine,
Celeste tries to look bored, unaffected, but her aura is a dazzling display of the opposite. We can go to my room. I nearly close my eyes and sigh with relief. That was the longest 40 minutes of my life. I praise the forwardness of older women who know exactly what they want. I throw money on the bar and lean forward, my face inches from hers. Brilliant, Celeste. You're an angel. The word angel catches on my tongue. The relief I've been feeling suddenly wavers, and I curse Anna as guilt shoves its way back into my consciousness. For a fleeting moment, I imagine telling this woman I've changed my mind. I imagine what it would be like to ignore the throb of pain and go back up to my room to be near Anna. It's a completely pointless and idiotic thing for me to ponder. There is absolutely no reason not to do this. I place my hand on the small of Celeste's back and lead her out of the bar. I want what I want, and I'm going to get it. Chapter 7. Sold. I'm starting to want you more than I want to. I just want to make you go away, but you taste like sugar. Like Sugar by Matchbox 20. Anna doesn't stir when I slip back into the room in the dead of night and take another shower. Her heavy sleeping is a sign of her overly trusting nature. She's never on guard, never listening, completely unaware of her surroundings. It's infuriating. I don't want to have to worry about her safety once this trip is over. I don't want to have to think about her at all. And yet, as I fall asleep, she fills my dreams. We begin to square dance together to that horrid Badonkadonk song, and we're both quite good. But it's one of those dreams that's so fucking weird you wish you couldn't remember it. In my dream, Celeste cuts in on our dance. This angers Anna, who slides over to the bartender, snogging him to make me jealous. I wake early, flustered and frustrated, and I realise I've been going about this all wrong. I've been trying to have my cake and eat it too. I'm not doing myself any favours by letting Anna know I'm sleeping with other chicks. Jealousy often helps get girls right where you want them, but not Anna. She's not going to offer herself up just to keep me from going to another. I vow to be nicer for the rest of the trip. And when I leave to work at night, I will pretend I'm doing something else. What a bloody knobhead I've been. I'm feeling bright and chipper at breakfast after my revelation, especially after I realise Anna has long since forgiven me for my Hulk smash moment with the lamp. I flirt with her, teasing her, giving her every bit of my attention. I watch her blush and listen to her giggle. I'm determined to win that body over if it's the last bleeding thing I do. I even let her drive. I don't expect Anna to have such a lead foot, and naturally her need for speed turns me on. I play game after game on my mobile to distract myself. "Do you mind if we stop?" she asks. I look up at the small Native American reservation, which piques my interest. Not at all. New Mexico is hot as hell, a dry heat that reminds me of the Western Cape of South Africa. The reservation has an old-world feel that gives me a false sense of ease. Anna is in her element, flitting around like a butterfly and smiling at everyone. I watch her examine jewellery, spending an especially long time staring at a turquoise necklace. It's the perfect piece for her, shaped like a heart. She turns it over, holds it up, practically pets it, then looks at the price tag. She quickly sets it down and steps away. Curiosity tugs me to her side. She obviously adores it. Why doesn't she buy it? Then I recall her and her mum's money problems, which are unheard of for a neph. I catch sight of the price tag and feel indignant on Anna's behalf. She should be able to have whatever she wants. "See anything you like?" I ask. I think I startle her because she jumps a little and moves even farther away from the necklace. "Yeah, it's all beautiful, isn't it?" Strange feelings wrestle around inside me. She won't admit she likes the necklace, as if she feels shameful for coveting it. "Can I get you something?" Her neck and cheeks turn bright pink. "Oh, no, I don't need anything, but thank you." It's baffling. She'd probably rather die than ask me to buy it for her. But I really want her to have it. Whoa. I blink, desperately needing to examine the reasons behind this feeling. Girls like gifts. It will make her think I care. This little gem could get me laid. Those are my only reasons, right? Right. Sold. But not in front of her. I don't think she'll allow it, and I don't want a scene. So I send her out to cool off the car while I buy drinks. The old whittling bloke gives me a knowing nod as I present the necklace and drinks.
For your love, he says in a dry, crackly voice.
My stomach swoops in an arc. I let out a dry laugh.
No, no, nothing like that.
He gives another knowing nod, accompanied by a grin this time. I want to tell the old fool to take back his cursed words. Now I feel jumpy. I pay and get out of there as fast as I can. I hope Anna wasn't listening. She's clueless when I climb in and hand her a drink. My brain is a flurry of blurred activity as Anna drives away, chatting merrily. I feel like smiling for no good reason when I think of the stupid necklace in my pocket. I want to punch myself in the face and remind myself this is all part of the plan. I needn't have so much fun with it. The fun will come when she's finally naked.
Will we be passing the Grand Canyon?
Anna asks. I've always wanted to see it.
That'd be brilliant.
I pull up the map on my mobile, but the search leaves me disappointed. We can't afford the extra time.
It's a bit out of the way. More than an hour.
Her father's not going anywhere, but the nun she needs to see is apparently on her deathbed. We can't waste too much time.
But how about this? We can go on the way back, since we won't have a time crunch.
That seems to make her very happy, and I'm far too happy at the moment as well. Probably because it feels like I'm winning her over bit by bit. But I can't seem to rid myself of this light feeling, even as we talk about serious things. When it gets quiet for a bit, Anna snorts out a giggle.
What's up with you? I ask. Are you sure it's not possible for a Nephilim to have the influence?
I narrow my eyes at the strange question. Dukes are powerful enough to influence humans through their words and even by pushing thoughts to them. They can't force them to do anything, but they can strongly urge them. It would be amazing to have that ability.
I've never heard of anyone having it, except a Duke, and trust me, I've tried. It doesn't work.
Still, my assurance leaves her looking skeptical.
We stop at a convenience shop for the loo, and as I approach the door to leave, I get the most bizarre urge to spin around on one foot. So I do. Wait just a damn second. I just did a ballerina move, in public. What the hell?
I look up and see Anna dart into an aisle, nearly falling over herself with laughter.
No way. No fucking way.
My mind reels. She cannot possibly influence people like one of the Dukes, can she? But then I remember she is different. She has two angels as parents, not just one, so who knows what else is possible? I'm overwhelmed with pride on her behalf and sheer jealousy, plus a bit of shock that she'd use it on me.
Oh, so not funny.
I leave the shop shaking my head. When she climbs into the vehicle trying not to laugh, I have to physically hold myself back from grasping her and giving her payback, Kaiden style. I'm having more fun than I can ever recall having. It's a heedless, stupid feeling, and I can't let it go. She starts making me laugh, and I can't stop. We laugh together over the stupidest shit, and I stop trying to remind myself that it's all part of my plan. I tell myself I'm just trying to win her over. But then I just let go of all thought and give in to the mood. In those moments, something happens I can't explain. All I know is that it feels right, and I can't hold it back. I don't want to. I let myself feel, and it's good. Chapter 8. A New Craving. I can feel you watching even when you're nowhere to be seen. I can feel you touching even when you're far away from me. Voodoo Doll by 5 Seconds of Summer. We make good time. As we near LA, I consider going straight to a hotel, but I'm not quite ready to throw us into another awkward situation. It's still early, I say. Let's drive through LA or Hollywood. Anna agrees, and moments later she squeals,
Oh my gosh, Kai, look, the Hollywood sign.
God, her excitement is cute. Every little thing, it's amazing. And then I replay her words. You called me Kai. It's the first time and it feels big. I have no idea where all these pansy-ass feelings are coming from and how I keep letting them slip in so easily or why it feels less and less important for me to block them. It's like I'm rebelling against my own damned self.
What are your friends like? Anna asks.
She's turned toward me, practically bouncing in her seat to learn more about me and the people in my life. My vision darkens at the reminder that my friends are Neff. I am Neff, and Anna is Neff. I cannot forget that, no matter how far removed I might feel from that life at this particular moment. So I decide